cool. So we're back for Dead Diary number 2. Today we're going to talk about three things. We're talking about some changes we made to our database to show off kind of the top tags for recent content, stuff that's been going on so we can showcase that, but that requires some interesting database work, so we'll do a little deep dive on that for a minute. And then Eric's going to talk about some of our client-side controls. He wrote a message box control that's pretty cool. And he'll talk about that, and then I'll show the wiki, because everybody apparently wanted to see that on the forum, so here you go, we'll talk about the wiki. This is my Scrum Enforcer bat. This is what I pick up whenever people start getting out of line in Scrum meetings. I'm looking around at all the people standing around behind the camera, and they know what this means.
I have to put on makeup. I've got a black eye.
See, that you don't mess with the meetings. Right? You show up on time, and you don't talk about turn. That's how it works. So the first thing, like I said, the first thing I'll talk about is the top tags. So the way we compute it is we get all the entries that were added to the system in the last X number of days. We use 3 by default, but it's configurable. And then we take those entries and we get how many times that entry was viewed using our view counting table. And then each one of the tags on them gets a score based on those number of views. We then just do a group by tag, and so each tag has a score. And so if you have entry A and its tags are Xbox and Halo, and then entry B is Xbox, and say, I don't know, like Iron Man.
Woohoo!
And then C is, say, Vista and Live. And entry A has 100 views, and B has 50, and C has 25 because everybody loves video games. Xbox would have a score of 150. Halo would be next at 100. Iron Man would come in at 50. And then Vista and Live would each come in at 25. So, pretty simple, little query to write, not that hard. As it turns out, when I first wrote it, I wrote it very straightforward, and it was very slow. And so, because I'm the guy who likes to optimize SQL queries, we had to figure out a way to make it run faster. And to show you why it was slow, it was slow because of the entry views. The way we track them is our entry view table has the following columns. It has entry ID. It has views, it has date, also has a view type, but that's not really important, because we don't care about type at this point. And then this is updated by a background service, so every time we get a view on the site, we store it in memory, and every minute, 10 minutes?
Something like that, it's configurable.
Yeah, every so often.
That's how we code. Every so often, something happens.
A background thread wakes up and pushes that out to the database and makes a new row in this table for every view. And so say the first times it runs, entry A, that's not really its ID, gets 4 views at, 4 p.m. And then 10 minutes later, entry A has accumulated another 3 views at, at 5 p.m. We're not going back in time, or it's not that good yet.
It's also 10 minutes later, but he put 5 p.m. But so let's say 4, it would be 4:10.
Yeah, 4:10. Just pretend that 5 means 4:10.
Every so.
And so to get A's total views, you simply say, give me all the ones for A, sum the views, total views. The downside was, when I written this the query simply, the way SQL had decided to do it was, well, the first thing I have to do is do a scan over this table and get out every single row and then group them by entry ID and sum their views. And so every time you asked for the top tags, you only really cared about the entries in the last 3 days. So that was maybe 10, 15 entries. It would calculate the views of every entry on the entire site. And that's not exactly optimal. And so the query estimated I get the execution plan, which is the first step to optimizing anything. It would say it would take about 57 CPU cycles to use the table and do the summing directly. That's really slow. Query would take about a minute. And the timeout in SQL in .NET is 30 seconds, so it would never work. So I had to figure out a way to fix it. And the way I fixed it was I created something that's new to SQL Server 2000 and was improved in 2005 called an indexed view. And so basically I made a view on the entry view table that was very simple. It was just select entry ID sum views from entry view. I'm abbreviating here because I like to. Group by entry ID, super, super simple. But, of course, as a view, it would just expand in place if I just use it normally, so that's not going to work. So it is that you got an index of the view. And what you do there is you just you create a clustered index on this view, and then I submit it on the entry ID column. That necessitated a couple tweaks to the view. The first thing is you have to add a count column so it can understand when you're doing an aggregate like this, it needs to know how many things it was counting so SQL can know when to update the index. And so you have to add something that says, I'm going to put it down here, but it would go up there, count big star. So you have to add a row to your, or add that to your select statement, and then there's a bunch of all kinds of options you can find on MSDN, not worth me going through all of the crazy restrictions here, but then you make a cluster index, and what SQL will do is it will actually run the view and save the results. So now when I query, as opposed to having to compute it, it'll just use it. I made the view, checked it in, and it was still 57 because it wasn't using the index. This table's getting a ton of inserts, and so the index was constantly out of date, so SQL wouldn't use it. Then I learned that there's a command that you can add when you query the view, where you say with no expand. And that forces SQL to use the index. The query then, so I force SQL to use the index, I ran the query, and the speed was 0.7. That takes about a second. That's way faster. And now the query will actually return and get the results quickly. The downside of this, of course, is that by forcing SQL to use the index might be slightly out of date, so the numbers may be 10, 11 views off. But in our algorithm, it actually doesn't matter. We don't need precise numbers. We need approximates. And so for us, it works great. So that's kind of a little look at optimizing queries and how we do that kind of stuff in our dev database, which is something that I'm often asked to do and enjoy immensely. So index views, how to use them and help out. There's some great stuff on MSDN about it if you just search index views. So
well, thank you, Professor Sampy. But shall we jump over to client sort of stuff?
Sure.
Get up, Eric. Get up.
Are we recording over there?
Yeah, we're actually trying something different today. We're going to be recording a screencast sort of while we go here. And then I will, there's Duncan behind the camera. I will chop that into the video as appropriate so you don't have to see really cruddy screen captures. So, I turn it over to Eric.
Okay, so I think I wrote this control about 3 in the morning. It's very simple.
To be clear, most of your code gets written in the wee hours of the morning, so it's not like that was really bad.
That's when I'm most productive. Yeah, there's the least amount of distractions, and I'm good. So to start, actually, first I'll talk about kind of how our templating structure works and how we do client-side controls with ASP.NET Ajax. So I go into Visual Studio. And this first control I'm showing is a message box control, if I didn't already mention that. And it's very simple. Actually, I'll just show how it works first. Sorry. We'll go into this test page that I set up. And we'll type in a title for the message box of test. And because I'm really good at test data, this is the description. And I have an option to decide how many seconds to show it, actually how many milliseconds to show it after it's, how many seconds to hide it after it's been shown. So it's, since it's in milliseconds, I put 5,000, so that'll be 5 seconds, and then I call the control by clicking that button. We get a nice little test. This is the description message box, and after 5 seconds it went away. Also, from the server side, I can do the same thing. So if I come to my test page, I don't know the alphabet, apparently.
Are you in pages? You're probably templates.
Yeah, I'm in the wrong place.
My bad.
excuse me. Test. Just have a little call here to the control. Calling show, passing in a title, message, and how many seconds to hide it after. I'll rebuild.
I'll just interject for a second. There was actually a thread on Channel 9 in the forums where someone was saying, I want a server-side message box. And I think we all were kind of laughing at the guy. And I think Eric was one of the people laughing at the guy. And then he went and built one.
Yeah.
It was fun. Part of it is that, I mean, we're not advocating that you switch over to this, you know, Windows Form style of server programming. But sometimes you have a message you want to put up, and doing a JavaScript alert isn't, you know, the ideal. We want to just put a message on the page, and we want to be able to use the same consistent UI throughout all the pages that do this. So this is an excellent control for us. The fact that it's called MessageBox and .show, well, they're just good names.
Yeah. Well, so the idea is, too, you know, with CSS, you can style it however you want. So on this page, it may be this little status area that just shows up at the top, but on another page, it may actually be a message box that pops up and overlays on
your
screen.
So we have the consistent way of doing it, but then on a site-by-site or page-by-page basis, you style it how you want.
Yeah. And so now, since I put it in page load, I hit F5 on my page, and we rebuild, and...
My computer's so fast.
Yeah.
La, 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 la.
It's a big project. Yep. So and you can see I get my test message, and after 5 seconds again, it will go away.
But Eric, how does it work?
Yes, so, how does it work? So we use ASP.NET Ajax for everything, and I'll show you kind of how we structure everything. There's two parts to it. We have a template structure set up so that, you know, typical, we just have an ASCX in the project, and then we have a code file in our base assembly that it uses for its code, and we've hooked up some ASP.NET Ajax to it using the iScript control, so I'll bring up that interface to show you. So here's our message box control. Base template is something for our system that keeps track of templating, and then iScript control is how ASP.NET Ajax can treat a control so that you can specify which scripts that control should use, and the script descriptors, which are setting up properties or components or other scripts or whatever to describe that control, so that on load it will actually, you know, set all your properties from the server and send them down JSON serialized. So if I come down to methods, you can see for the message box, I just have one script that's actually embedded in the resource, which you specify we do in the top of our files. So this sets it up as a web resource. And it's basically just done by folder structure. So the assembly is called evnet. There's a folder called web, folder called templates, folder called scripts, and then that's where messagebox.js lives. I can actually show it, I guess. It's right here.
And if you notice, we had to mark it as an embedded resource.
Yes.
As a build type, because...
Yep, right here.
We have to embed it to be an embedded resource.
Yep. So then, that just specifies, hey, pull out this web resource, and that's my script reference for the control, and that will... ASP.NET Ajax takes care of all the ordering, and you don't have to worry about where files are or anything. It registers them at the appropriate place. And then this is the getScriptDescriptors method, where I specify my script control descriptor, because this is a script control, not a component. So it actually has UI associated with it. And then you give it the name of your class, which I'll show in the JavaScript file in a second, and its ID, since this is a control and we have UI. And then down here, you can see I register a couple elements. So I have one called title label, and what's here in the first field is the property name in the JavaScript object. And then what you have here is the client ID of that actual object, in this case of an ASP.NET label. I do that for a couple of them, and then I have add property, which basically is just a variable that I want to set on my client object of visible, and show timeout was actually hide after, so how many seconds it should hide it after. And then so the server side of it's pretty simple and stuff probably anybody that's done ASP.NET would already know. I just have different methods, different overloads for show, one that just takes a title, one that takes title and message, title right after, blah, blah, blah. And then my root one that just makes sure it has a title, and then set it to visible, just so it renders immediately. So it's not like it's there and then the client control tells it to be visible. I'll actually set it to be visible to start. If it's false, like if I want the message box to be rendered but not seen yet, that'll be set to false, and then just set my variables. And then again, down here in the script descriptors is where I pass those down to the JavaScript object. So the JavaScript object now, take a look at that. Basically, if you go to ajax.asp.net and go to their documentation, they kind of have a bunch of samples on how to structure your JavaScript. So we've followed that method here. And actually, I think they moved their docs over to MSDN, so they'll redirect you to there, I believe. So if you've never worked with ASP on AJAX, it's very object-oriented. So we register a namespace for this control, evnet.ui, because remember the control back here we specified was evnet.ui.messageBox. So we register that namespace.
You can just come
in. Yeah, that's fine.
Snappy got a phone call while we were recording.
That's okay. And then so this is basically, it's just a function, but it's basically a constructor for the class where we take that initial element that was specified right here, the client ID, and then pass it through and initialize it. Don't have to worry about that. That's just setting up the object. And then these are private variables that I'll be using in the control. And then in the prototype section, you're basically setting up everything about the object for that instance. So these are properties. Getters and setters are how you do properties in ASP.NET AJAX. They're very simple. Just return the variable or set it. So then that sets me up all of my properties with the variables that I set in script descriptors and the elements that I need to work with. And then down below, I have my actual methods on the control. So I have show, which again is basically mimicking what my server code was doing, in that, you know, I show and I take a title, message, and hide after and decide what to do appropriately. And then just call my properties and set visibility or do whatever I need to do. I won't go into everything about it. The only interesting part is like hide after delay. That is just a small little method here that does a window.set timeout. And then after the delay, call .hide. So it will hide itself. You could call an animation to fade it out or do whatever you wanted. And then here at the bottom, it just makes sure that that class is registered with ASP.NET. So now that you have kind of the guts of how it works, ASP.NET will know exactly how to call everything. So if we look on the rendered result of the page, or actually, I'll look quick at the page itself, just to show you how I called it, so you can see how simple it is to use. I go to my test page. So the page that you saw, with it just has these three text boxes and a button. So there's text box, text box, text box, button. And the button, I just on-click, I call a really simple function that just takes, it gets the instance of the message box. And so with ASP.NET AJAX, you can find any component or control that you've written using the $find method, and then just passing it the client ID. In this case, I'm just calling inline ASP there and response.ready in the client ID. And then these just get the values from my client text boxes. And then just call .show and pass title, message, and hide after. Again, show is my method right here. So super simple, and it works exactly the same from the server or from the client. And then, again, if you've never done ASP.NET on Ajax before, I'll show you how it registers things. So at the very bottom...
So it's worth noting for a moment there, because we're in dev and debug, all of our individual little component CSS files are linked in individually. In reality, in the release, that's all one CSS reference, so
yep.
Don't let that freak you out.
We can
huge list of CSS there.
There's some code behind that, so we can probably, like, next time or some other video, we could go through, like, how our CSS stuff works.
Yeah.
It's sort of interesting.
Yeah, death dap themes.
Yeah, so you'll notice at the bottom, the very bottom of this test page, ASP.NET has set up, because of get script descriptors, that it needs to initialize that message box. And what it does is it just calls a create, and it takes my class name, and then passes a JSON serialized object that sets all those properties. So you can see, like, you know, my message container was an element, so it calls get to go find it, sets it. So this is how ASP.NET Ajax sets everything up, and it's really nice because you don't have to worry about, like, ordering or anything like that. If you've built stuff pre JavaScript libraries, like before ASP.NET Ajax or Dojo or UE or any of those libraries, it's a little complicated to keep track.
All right, so now we're going to talk about the wiki. I got a couple comments about this on the last video and in the thread about it on the coffee house. So we do have one. It's not based on FlexWiki anymore. It's actually based on the wiki engine used by CodePlex. All of their pages are all wikis, and they factored out their engine separately, and we're all one big happy corporate family. And so we're using their text processing engine, but all of the UI to get the text and show it and render it and store it and all that stuff is written by us. So let's start with how it works. So you can see here the homepage, which I've clearly been editing constantly because it's got OMG, exclamation point, and stuff. So like everything on our site, it's all fancy Ajax, so you can scroll backwards through the versions, as you can see, and it'll just reload them for you. And that's cool. You can do comments on a wiki page, and so that way the page itself doesn't become kind of polluted with, well, what about this, what about this? You have a place to do comments that feels like the rest of the site. You can go into the edit mode, and you can change this. It's on a video. And save it. It's on a video. And now we're at version 21. We show you how many views, the last time it was edited by, and changed it. You can share it out to all of our different share places, comments, everything like that. And the comment editor is the same one that we showed off last week, so you could fork off a related discussion into the coffee house if you wanted to about a wiki page. So everything can flow back and forth and nice. So you can go off to new pages. Oh!
Nice.
All right, where did we blow that up? All right, whatever. Normally you can go off to new pages. And I'll figure out what that was, but...
it's test data.
Yeah, that is true, is that it is test data. I swear that worked 5 minutes ago. Anyway, so the way the wiki works is it's integrated completely in every wiki page is an entry. I mean, we've said this on previous videos, but everything in our system is entries, tags, and users, and nice links, but they're not... We have four things now, and they're interconnected.
No one expects a Spanish Inquisition.
And so... All wiki pages are entries, and wiki namespaces are delimited by tags. And so this is in the default namespace, but there's a we can make any number, and you'll get nice clean URLs, channel.mst.com/wiki/silverlight. It will be Silverlight's wiki. And you can dynamically create pages inside there. All of that all works. Text processing is done by CodePlex, so it doesn't have the same syntax as the FlexWiki does anymore, but we kind of hacked it in there so we could run it through all the conversions. So you won't have it when it's live, but we'll be able to convert all the old wiki content and preserve the same formatting when it comes across. But back to the idea that they're all entries. But the thing is, wiki pages have history. They have all the different versions of the page, as opposed to most of our engines just have a single body text. And so we have a separate table with the entry versions table, which has the entry ID, its version number, and then the wiki source for that entry, as well as the user and the created date. And as for a wiki page, as opposed to using the body, it just uses that table. Other than that, they're the same as any other entry. You can tag them, you can put them in, you tag them, you can link files to them, all that kind of stuff, all works, because everything is one type of thing in our system.
Which means they'll bubble up everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you search for it, or like you go to a tag page or anything like that, you'll get the wiki content, and it'll just be, it's a first class citizen across the site, as opposed to now where it's kind of in the back alley, kind of hidden away, and also it doesn't hit the disk like the current wiki does, so hopefully it won't cause resource contention. So that's the wiki, and we can maybe do a kind of a deeper dive on the architecture of how it's componentized and stuff a little later, but just as a visual, it's there, it works, and we'll have it for 9 when it launches. And we'll preserve all the old content, so if you go and edit it now, it's not like you're wasting your time.
So if you want to go put some spam on the IE8 page, or IE7 page, like everyone else seems to be doing, yes.
Yeah.
That spam will carry forward.
Yeah, we care about our users and the products they want to sell.
So hey, those are my affiliate links. So.
Alright, so that's it for this week. Let us know if there's anything in particular that you want to see next week, and we'll show you what we've built in the last week since then.
And what are we going to build next?
What are we going to build next?
Well, the homepage.
So there's actually, what we've actually been working on this week, I'm coming over to the fireside chat spot, but since I'm so much shorter than Stampy, I might have dropped out of frame. But,
You're okay.
We actually have been spending a lot of time working on the homepage, but since that's a very UI-driven element, and the UI pass from our designer hasn't been done yet, we don't really want to show you yet. But we are working on some new components for the homepage, for how we show the featured element, or as Charles likes to call it, and I don't know if he says this publicly, the catbird seat. Some other things around that, the homepage. The other thing we're going to spend a lot of time on in the next week is data import. I don't know how interesting that'll be to show, but it is, of course, a very large job getting the data into a new format, making sure we don't lose anything, making sure we keep the relationship between old URLs and new content so that we can, of course, do proper redirects. So that's going to take us a lot of time. I don't know how much good developer diary content will come out of it, but if you have questions about how we're doing data import, now's the time to ask. Great. Thanks again, everybody. Hope the screencast format works better for you, but, of course, let us know if it sucks.